Kansas City is focusing so much of its efforts on continuing to revitalize downtown, including a new 800-room convention hotel near Bartle Hall. But what about Kansas City's east side? What policies should be put into place and what types of developments can help? Joining us now in our continuing look at Kansas City's east side are the Reverend Dr. Vernon Howard. He's with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Urban Summit. Reverend Howard, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Kansas City, Missouri City Councilman Scott Taylor is also here. He's the at-large 6th District Councilman. He's also a chair of the Special Committee on Small Business. Scott, welcome back to you.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Councilman Jermaine Reed's also visiting. He represents the city's 3rd City Council District. Councilman Reed, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
A new grocery store is coming to 31st and Prospect, Reverend Howard. As I mentioned, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but is it?
A very big deal.
Yeah.
No doubt that the Prospect Corridor is a center pathway for the urban core. And it is no secret that all of the major indicators of human health and wealth along the Prospect Corridor and in the surrounding blocks from Troost eastward to Van Brunt and from Bannister to Independence Avenue, all the wellness indicators tell us and our experiences tell us that the economy, that health care provision, that employment, that population decline and wage earnings, business development, and unfortunately, investment from city and state are declined and far beyond other parts of Houghton area.
Does that begin to explain, Councilman Reed, why we haven't seen a grocery store developed in this area for so long now?
Yeah, that's a good starting point about a number of things that have kind of just kind of been in a way as kind of maybe roadblocks. But, you know, the reality of it is that there's so many people in our community in the 3rd District who have to go miles and miles away, as Dr. Howard mentioned, about the experience. And I think that is the key point there, is that the experience of people in our community, when you have elderly residents who tell you that they've got to take a bus just to go to a grocery store, there's no access to fresh foods and vegetables right in the heart of your community. It's something that people, again, as you mentioned, take for granted. And we I think that's the importance of why we as the city have continued to work hard over probably 10 years now. The grocery store there at Linwood and Prospect has been dormant. And it's important that we just continue to work hard and it become a reality for residents next year. And we have made a start with the Aldi's grocery store at 39th and Prospect as well.
Yeah. Councilman Scott Taylor, some folks might wonder why the city has to invest $12 million to get a grocery store when there's already a food desert there, meaning there aren't any grocery stores, aren't any competitors around. Why does it take so many dollars to get this to happen?
Well, Steve, thanks. First of all, I want to thank you for picking this as a topic, and I'm glad you're doing it on a regular basis because I think we need to discuss this. It's an important issue, and we do need to continue to invest on in East Side projects. Our hope is that this will be a catalyst investment, as we've seen in other projects. Put a little money in from the city's perspective, and you'll see other private sector dollars coming in.
Some folks wonder why you didn't invest more money and redevelop the entire strip mall here where this grocery store is going to be located.
Well, we have first of all, this hasn't come in front of council yet, committee, so this is just announced, as you know. There's more to come, I'm sure. But the catalyst thing, I think one thing I can say about this council, we've really done, there's been unanimous support for East Side projects. I know in planning and zoning, we've advanced every project that Councilman Reed's brought to us, and he's been at every planning and zoning committee championing these projects, so his leadership's been very strong. But the key is that we support these projects and bring in private investment, and that will help to start you'll start seeing results from that. But unless we do it, I think we can just keep waiting for the private sector to come in. I'm not sure that that will happen over time unless we take the lead on it.
Jermaine?
Yeah, I would add that there are plans to make sure that the entire shopping center is redeveloped as well. And that's part of the reason why we're working with the developer and making sure that we have, if that's not only the parking lot, but also the businesses that are there, that we're retaining them.
So more is coming here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just not the grocery store. As it was mentioned, the Prospect Corridor is a key part. And there, we've been working hard to make sure that we have a true focus on the Prospect Corridor. The grocery store is the catalyst for that and so much more to come.
Yeah. Reverend Vernon Howard, I had a sense from your first remarks that maybe you believe the city needs to be doing a whole lot more than just this grocery store. Did I hear that correctly?
When folks ask, I think so, Steve, when folks ask about an amount of $12 million, I'm hoping they're asking why not more. When we consider, and I think both Councilman Taylor and Councilman Reed are probably more aware than I am of the figures that reflect the kinds of rebates and tax incentives that major corporations receive, whether it's TIF money or otherwise, to develop in locations, as you mentioned at the outset of the show, such as downtown and other areas. And there's just been that disproportionate kind of vestment, I believe, on the part of the city. I think Councilman Reed and Councilman Taylor have done an outstanding job in paving the way. But I think what it requires is more advocacy. You mentioned SCLC and the Urban Summit. It actually was some 8 to 12 weeks ago or so that Councilman Reed visited the weekly Urban Summit meeting, and the group of urban core leaders were in dialogue with Councilman Reed and others about the Prospect Corridor. And sometimes when you are a community that does not have a lot of money, then you have to use advocacy, and you have to build alliances in other ways to help municipalities do the right thing.
Well, what kind of frustration do you hear from your friends, your colleagues, about the investment the city's made downtown versus the investment the city's made on the east side, Reverend?
I think the frustration comes about when we begin to reflect upon the social ills that are present within the areas that are disproportionately invested in and sometimes divested from. And so the frustration comes when we look at the crime rate, the rate of violence, when we look at imprisonment, and when we look at the declining value of housing stock and the flee of individuals to more suburban and prosperous areas. When we see the hurt of the people, that's the frustration. I would call it more hurt and pain that we experience every day.
Councilman Taylor, you're nodding your head. What's the city's response as to why it's not done even more on the east side?
Well, I think it is done more now in this last 4 years, and I think we can talk to all the projects. So we have a long list of projects, and we actually, for the first time, I think in a long time, have a brochure. We have a sufficient number of projects that the city's published a brochure of the especially housing projects. And so we all agree we need to do more with limited resources, and that's really the trick.
But you're saying there are things being addressed, there are projects underway that are in response to the concerns that Reverend Howard just laid out here.
Oh, there are quite a few. I think one of the issues—
Give us a sampling, Scott.
I will in just a second, but one of the issues I see is we do a lot of things as council people, getting things through committee, getting them started. And then I think we could do a better job of telling the impact of those projects after they actually are up and running. I think we have a lot of opportunities to do that. We have feel free to jump in. Councilman Reed's been the champion on a lot of these projects, but the East Patrol project's going to be a big improvement and help out.
$74 million.
That's a brand new East Patrol Division headquarters right in the neighborhood there.
Yeah, it's $74 million, which is paid from out of the public safety sales tax money, and it originally started off about $50 million, and then there was an increase that moved it up to $74 million. But over a four-block area in town, right there in the heart of the community at 27th and Prospect. That's the site that was selected. And if you haven't had an opportunity to go by there, that area certainly looks totally different and will be opening up probably at the end of this year, at the beginning of next year.
And why is that going to be an important project? What difference is it going to make?
Well, you know, I had an last night I was at church and I was speaking to one of the residents at the church, and she lives over off of Garfield, not too far from the site. And so she talked to me about the importance of not only what that police station and crime lab means for her, but because of it being on that site, but the importance of it in terms of her living there and her neighbors. Feeling safer, but also how they're going to rehab many of the homes in the area, you know, have a huge focus on the infrastructure around. So if that's curbs, sidewalks, or so much more, that she's feeling like we're not left out. And, you know, she wanted to remind me of, hey, this is more than just what you all are doing there and building, you know, in her words, like an ivory tower, but don't forget about the rest of us. And that's what we have done, is making sure that we're not forgetting about them. Unfortunately, there are some vacant properties and homes around the area, but we at the city and our housing department has had a huge focus on making sure that we're building new homes and repopulating the urban core and renewing the urban landscape right there, mm-hmm. but then also making sure that many of our senior residents, like the lady I referenced a minute ago, she's 75 years old. She's concerned that, you know, she's not moved, been forced to move out of her home because she can't afford the way it is. And here she's lived in the neighborhood for over 50 years, and she's been able to keep her community looking good. And she wants to be able to continue to do that. But many of the residents, like the Key Coalition neighborhood, have been really active in making sure that remains a reality for them.
Yeah. Councilman Taylor?
Let me add to that, because Jermaine's exactly right. The example we have of an impact of a police station, South Patrol. Mm-hmm. Many of the assets of this East Patrol station were modeled after the South Patrol because it's been so successful. You know, you may recall that when that was being considered, the original location was kind of hidden. And so Councilman Sharp and my wife, Councilwoman Jolly at the time, insisted that it be in a more visible location. What that's done is shown a campus-like setting, a major investment in South Kansas City. And since then, we've had the Cerner announcement and several other announcements. And I would attribute some of the comfort of making an investment to seeing a large investment by the city in that area that's very visible, same as we're doing with East Patrol.
Mm-hmm. Cite two or three other projects that you might want to highlight here, both of you, Councilman Reed and Councilman Taylor.
Sure. I'll go and jump right across the street there at 27th and Prospect with the Morning Star Baptist Church. It's been in the hopper for a very long time, and
right.
Pastor John Modest Miles has really worked hard on doing that, and they're getting ready to break ground. We talked about the $12 million city investment at Linwood and Prospect Shopping Center for redevelopment, which, of course, has been announced. We also are working extremely hard to make sure that the Prospect Max, which is part of a $40 to $50 million investment that will be made through federal dollars, and we're working hard to secure those funds, but it's looking very favorable on our part. We've had many discussions with the folks at the Department of Transportation, and they are very favorable with that. But we did just receive the Ladders of Opportunity grant from the federal government, which was $1.5 million, which helps us repave mm-hmm. many of those. And what's important about this is that it's putting people to work in our community, but then also changing what the infrastructure looks like around that. But that's just Stone Prospect.
Right.
can talk about so many other projects throughout just the east side of Truce, east of Truce that we've been talking about, but right in the heart of the 3rd District that are very similar.
Well, Reverend Howard, as you hear this litany of projects that are on the east side, what are you thinking?
The resurgence is positive,
mm-hmm.
Without a shadow of a doubt. And one of the things that we begin to look at is an analysis of these kinds of projects to really get a sense of the real benefit in an area which, frankly, is predominantly African-American
mm-hmm.
for the most part. They are Latino And other races and colors of people in the area, but primarily African American.
Is that changing at all?
It is changing quite a bit. We see an influx of others, whites and others, into the urban core and into central Kansas City. But the point that I'm making with respect to these developments, I think they are positive. Here are some things we ask ourselves about these developments. Number one, does the consumer base within the immediate area of the development have the wherewithal income-wise in order to support the businesses and the developments mm-hmm. that are going in, which speaks to the need of a very significant issue that we're dealing with right now in the city in terms of living wage ordinance. Mm-hmm. If people in that area do not have the means to support the businesses and developments, to support the rents and the mortgages and to purchase the goods that are there for supply, then we have an issue that we need to deal with there.
Well, by and large, are the choices the city makes in terms of the investments it's putting into the east side, are they making wise investments in terms of putting them in places where they can be supported by nearby people who live in the neighborhoods?
It is always wise to invest in communities that have been neglected because it's the right thing to do. The question becomes, do we take a comprehensive approach and do what Councilman Reed and Councilman Taylor are advocating for mm-hmm. is to ensure that there are wages that people have that can support these businesses. Mm-hmm. So it's also wise. I don't think it's unwise. The second thing is, in these developments, to what extent or measure are African American and people of color entrepreneurs and businesses also benefiting from these kinds of developments as well? Mm-hmm. Because we don't want people in the urban core and African American businesses to simply be the lifeblood of other people's profits and wealth. Mm-hmm. attainment. And so that's key too. Are we looking at African American business owners, entrepreneurs also, who are benefiting
yeah.
from the development as well, not just as a consumer, but as an owner as well?
We're talking about East Side development. Let me get our listeners involved here. And folks, so what do you want to see more of in your neighborhoods? Maybe if you're listening here east of Troost, and who's responsible for making it happen? Give us a shout. 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Councilman Taylor, hop in here.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'd like to tag on to what the Reverend's saying, because I think he's exactly right on point as far as entrepreneurial establishment. One of the things that Councilman Reed and I worked on early on with the Small Business Committee was recognizing that we can't just wait for the large development to come to the east side. We need to help small businesses start and massive small businesses. So we set up with several community partners, including the Small Business Administration, Women's Employment Network, the microloan program. And I would like to make a quick, give you a radio exclusive announcement.
Yeah, go. Today. Go ahead. We like exclusive news here. Yeah.
We've been
breaking
on in the
news.
Past.
Yeah, breaking news. It's even better.
We are happy to report that loan program we set up, which provides loans from $500 up to $50,000, average loan about $10,000, has now surpassed the $2 million barrier. We've loaned out $2.3 million, 156 businesses. Half of those on the east side of Troost, which is exactly why we set up the program to make capital available where it was not available a few years ago because of several issues. We've got that source in place. So
that's a change in terms of this focus east of Troost, you're saying?
Yeah, this will complement everything else that's being done by letting individual entrepreneurs that want to start a business start it east of Troost. Anchor neighborhoods, provide basic services for people that live in neighborhoods so that they don't have to travel miles to go get some of these things done that we take for granted in other parts of the city sometimes. The other thing is 58% of the loans have been made to women-owned businesses. So this program is very flexible. Our BizCare office can answer any questions if somebody's interested in it. And I just want to thank you for – I know we've had other sessions on this program, but this has surpassed our expectations when we set it up through the Small Business Committee.
Okay, let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Michael from Midtown, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I drive past the new police station development construction site and don't see many people of color working on the project. $74 million but how much of that either businesses or construction workers went to people that live in the Prospect Corridor? And then how will the shopping center project be any different?
Councilman Jermaine Reed.
Yeah, thank you. Very good question. And I will tell you that $17 million have gone to minority companies. We have exceeded our MBE, WBE goals on that site. And every person, every construction company, from the front end, from when we were doing just plans and folks who were working, doing architect work, all of those numbers have been exceeded. And even on the site, I walk the site weekly, and there are African Americans, Latinos who are working the site that look like me and you, perhaps. And so I encourage you that if you don't see folks, to call my office. I remember holding the project up for a couple of weeks because I wasn't comfortable with the numbers that were been introduced in the beginning. But we have a commitment to make sure that happens.
The area, I think someone just said, is predominantly African American.
It is.
We don't get 17%. What percent of that is 74 million? It's not.
It
doesn't seem to be out of balance.
Yeah, I understand your concern, but the thing is that when you look at the minority participation goals generally, they are probably at maybe 10% or 8%, and companies, you know, getting those dollars to African Americans. On this project, we have exceeded at almost over 60-70%.
You're double that,
for those numbers. And so that is a huge start. And when we look at even our Section 3, people across the country are looking at our project as a project where they are using it as a catalyst of how we exceed those numbers. So you're right. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it really is.
Okay, time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about the challenges of Eastside development inside Kansas City, Missouri. Our number again, 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.
Coming up today on Here and Now at noon, a look at the week in politics. President Obama is wanting to convince fellow Democrats on the Pacific Rim trade deal. We'll hear about that, plus about a new shoe for kids that grows with growing feet. Stay with us for those stories and much more on Here and Now from noon to 2 on KCUR. KCUR is supported by Bo Ling's Fine Chinese Restaurants, offering fresh cuisine and convenient catering services for business meetings, parties, or special events. Their catering menu can be found online at bolings.com or by calling the plaza location. Bo Ling's, Chinese, please. You don't need a TV or a newspaper to get your news anymore. Computers and smartphones bring news to our fingertips via websites and apps, blogs and social media. So KCUR wants to know, how do you keep up with the news? Newspaper subscription, mobile app, or social media? Tweet us your answers with the Tell KCUR hashtag, comment on our Facebook page, or leave us a voicemail at 816-235-2881 and listen for your answers Thursday morning on Central Standard. It's 11:36, 62 degrees right now in Midtown Kansas City, looking for a high today of 70 degrees with sunny skies. Let's get back to Up to Date on KCUR.
And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our chat with former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell or the latest edition of A Fan's Notes, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, the ethics professors are back. They'll join us to talk about boycotting businesses to support a cause and public shaming via social media. This hour, we're talking about Eastside development and the challenges there. We're visiting with the Reverend Dr. Vernon Howard with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Kansas City, Missouri Councilman Scott Taylor, and his colleague, Councilman Jermaine Reed. Our number here, 816-235-2888. Reverend Howard, when you consider the potential of the Eastside and you in your dreams, you think about it, what could it be? What does it need to be? What could it be?
I think the caller raises a good point, and I don't want to digress, but I think that's a segue into your question. The expectation of projects like this, what should, in an urban, predominantly African-American context, what should the economic impact and involvement be like? And I think that's a good question that we ought to continue to entertain. When we go to other parts of the city and we see developments like this, there is never a situation where we see in a white development that I have seen black business owners and construction workers and anybody asking, where are white workers that reflect the community? And perhaps we have a right to ask that, like the caller did, because for so many years there's been this kind of disproportionate representation. And so I think that's a valid question that needs to be continually explored. In terms of our own community in the urban core, for me the issue is health and wellness. The issue is equality. The issue is justice. When we begin to look at, for example, infant mortality rates that are so disparaging and harmful to young black babies, when we begin to look at graduation rates and testing scores in education, when we begin to look at simply the notion of a provision of health care and wellness for people and the or mortality rates of adults, of individuals, we begin to see these kinds of things to people whose lives are negatively impacted every day. How do we do that and get beyond that? And we believe that it is primarily an economic justice issue, Steve. And that's why living wages are so important. That's why the inclusion of black entrepreneurship is so important. And that's the reason why a fair pay to working people, no matter what they do, no matter what manner of work, a living wage is important as well.
Let's go back to some calls here. Let's go to Leslie from Kansas City, Missouri. Leslie, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is, we have this burgeoning tech sector in Kansas City with Smart City and Google Fiber, but yet we have woefully underrepresented people of color in the tech jobs in Kansas City. How do we train them to not only qualify for jobs at Cerner and Garmin and those sorts of places, but also, as Dr. Howard said, start their own entrepreneurial endeavors in the tech-related fields.
Training people of color for tech jobs, Councilman Taylor, what would you talk about there?
Well, it's a good point, and one we'll have that discussion with Cerner as that construction is beginning, and other companies. But I think that that is definitely an area that we need to look at closer.
Councilman Reed, add anything there?
Well, I would add just that we've got to continue not only with tech jobs, but also just skilled labor jobs, if it's out on construction sites or other type of jobs, that we got to continue to make sure that people are trained to go into these sectors. That's really, really important. I appreciate Leslie's call.
Sharon called us to say that the Linwood and Cleveland YMCA is being redeveloped and expanded. That'll begin later on this month. That's interesting. Jose from Belton. Jose, you're on Up to Date.
Hello, this is Jose. Well, my thing with all of this, I think that businesses should also do their part and be more on social media. That way they can attract customers, not just from that part of the city, but from other parts of the city. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as putting out there what they have to offer. I've been doing this with the Latino community. I did not wait for the city to do anything about the Latino community. And I have about 25,000 followers on Facebook. I have about 50,000 people viewing my posts. So I did a group, and I'm helping a lot of businesses, you know, pick up the pace. I'm showing them how to market all over the city without spending a lot of money. So I think in regards to the entrepreneur, I think that there's not really a training. I think that people should just take it to themselves to do certain things. And, of course, we need help from the city as well. But I think that we need to pick up the first step as people from the city, and we need to pick up our city. This city has tremendous opportunity. And me as a Latino, you know, I like to help out everybody. It doesn't matter what color or race they are. But I think that we as people, we need to stand up and do things ourselves as well.
All right, Jose. Councilman Taylor.
Yeah, I think that appreciate the caller and comments. Really, the last two callers, I'd like to just mention one thing that we are doing that's already been underway as part of the Cerner development. I should have mentioned this previously, but there was a $6 million allocation as part of that deal so that Cerner will work with the Hickman Mills School District on STEM projects, which will create that base, because we really need to start
science,
earlier
technology,
than,
that yeah.
Yeah, get that education in the schools now so that we have we train the workers for tomorrow, and that's already underway. I mean, that's a good example of what we can do with other new developments as they come in.
Why is Cerner doing that? Was that a requirement the city placed on them to get involved with STEM education, Scott?
There was an original requirement. It goes way back to the previous deals and the incentives, but there was a money portion allocated. What Cerner did was, when they came in, they said, we'd really like to focus this on the school district and education. It was their initiative that actually brought that up. I don't think they get credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the $6 million will go a long way to getting that started in the Hickman Mills Foundation mm-hmm. school district. And I really look forward to seeing how that impacts.
Reverend Howard, you know, are there areas on the east side where we're seeing maybe the early stages of gentrification like we've seen in the Crossroads District, or are we still a ways away from that?
I think we see it without mm-hmm. a doubt.
Like where?
Well, you can look at areas along the corridor, for example, of Paseo,
mm-hmm.
and we begin to see that this kind of development of new housing and so forth
it's
takes place.
Up property
it
values.
It is driving up, but we are beginning to see that it is not always African Americans or people of color
mm-hmm.
Who are living in these kinds of developments.
And what do you make of that? What kind of threat is that to the neighborhood? What kind of opportunity is that?
Well, I don't know that it's a threat necessarily on its face, but what it is an indicator of is that there is a now dual kind of reality where areas like the Hickman Mills School District, which Mr. Taylor spoke of, has some very serious educational problems in terms of its own accreditation
mm-hmm.
and also the issue of violence and poverty in that area, which used to be a suburban area.
Mm-hmm.
And so what our people, they look at this situation, they say now we look at Hickman Mills that's now becoming reflective of that which we have seen in the urban core.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because the dynamics now shift poor people and people of color out from this urban core area, and now you have pockets of areas out here mm-hmm. where there are troubling social and economic indicators. But I want to get back, and not to monopolize the conversation, Steve.
Yeah.
It used to be, and this has to do with the technology piece. It used to be, and my uncle's 75, 80 years old. He says, you know, when we got out of high school, we'd be able to go to the railroad, or we'd go to Leeds, or we'd go to the packing house,
mm-hmm.
Or we'd go to GM, or we'd go to Ford, we'd go to Clay Como. We knew that there was opportunity out there. If we were simply willing to work, then we were able to obtain a wage that we could take care of ourselves mm-hmm. and our families. And at that time, he believed, and I think some of our elders believe, that wages, to a large extent, for persons, if they were just willing to work, were not poverty wages.
Mm-hmm.
And they could go on the job and get that training. But it's a new ball game now. And what we haven't done is caught up with the technology training piece. But we also haven't caught up with the wage piece. That's where we've got to go also.
Eastside Development mm-hmm. is our topic here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Imani from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Steve, for taking my call. My question pertains to the 18th and Vine district. I think there have been several incubators that have been down there and have not sustained themselves. My question is particularly pertains to the tenant finish clause down there, which makes it really difficult for a small business owner to try to open their business in that area. What can be done to make it easier for a small business owner in the 18th and Vine area?
Councilman,
I'll jump in. Yeah, sure. I want to say that the BEU building there, BEU has been operating the Lincoln building down on 18th and Vine, and currently it is at capacity. And there are a number of small businesses that have been growing and thriving right there in that small incubator. And so I'm really thrilled about that in terms of just development and off and making sure that we have further businesses in the 18th and Vine area, that is something that we are working toward. I think we see in areas like City Market or over in Crossroads or even in Power and Light where you have perhaps a business that is working every single day to make sure that there are new businesses coming into the area.
Yeah.
But we don't have that in the 18th and Vine area.
As we begin to come to the end of this segment, what else, what other types of businesses are needed east of Truce that aren't there now? What's on your wish list right now, Jermaine?
Absolutely, more grocery stores. We've got to have those in all areas of the 3rd District. You have over 78,000 people who live in an area that is very diverse, part of it urban, part of it rural, part of it out at the stadiums, you know, some the suburban and what have you. But we've got to have more grocery stores.
Is the city prepared to make the same kind of subsidies we're offering the Sunfish at 31st and Prospect going forward?
You said, is the city prepared?
Is it prepared to continue making those kinds of subsidies?
We are working toward that. Right even at 27th and Truce, we're working on the grocery store, and we're looking to get some additional funding from the state.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of pushing and advocating for those.
Mm-hmm. Scott, Taylor, anything else you might point to that's needed over there?
Well, I think the grocery stores are important because that drives up traffic, which will bring in other retail around the grocery store. So I agree with that. I also think we need to continue to be vigilant looking at housing projects.
Absolutely.
And bringing
yes.
more consumers back to the east side, because that will help drive the demand for small businesses and services that will be available to everybody that already lives there as well.
Reverend Howard?
If I could, I would just throw it. We also got to have making sure that those businesses are coming in there. A lot of folks who want to open and operate a business, those really keep the community going as well.
That's
We're
right.
going to leave our conversation there. I want to thank the Reverend Vernon Howard with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He took your time, Reverend.
He does it all the time.
And two members of Kansas City, Missouri City Council, Scott Taylor and Jermaine Reed. Thank you all for a very good conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
We're
glad to be here.